This week on Smash Bros.
Hey, Ellis, everything okay?
Yeah, what's the address? Oh, hold on, I got another call. Hey, Sin, sorry about tonight. I gotta suck up to that loser again. Sin? Hello?
It's not Sin. It's just that loser. Don't bother coming.
Smash Bros.
Hello, and welcome to Smash Bros., the podcast about the NBC musical drama series Smash.
Which aired from 2012 to 2013.
Thank you for jumping in there with the years. We are a podcast about said musical drama series Smash. We are the Smash Bros., becoming better bros through Smash, the NBC musical drama series.
Who am I talking to here?
Oh, my name is Jimmy Blackman.
Hey, I'm Marty Scanlon.
We're the hosts of Smash Bros. We are talking about episode 11 of season 1, The Movie Star. We will get into all the drama that comes with a star coming into rehearsals.
The drama, the laughter, the tears.
The music, tears, everything. And we have a wonderful guest on today to discuss all of this with us. He is the deputy arts and entertainment editor at BuzzFeed News, and he is one of the co-hosts of After Smash, the podcast about the musical NBC drama series Smash that ran from 2012 to 2013.
What a novel concept.
We are so happy to have him on to discuss all of our Smash podcast beef. And
as we've said before, we stand on the shoulders of giants.
That's
so
right.
Thank you for being here.
Welcome to the podcast, Lewis Peitzman.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad we could you know, deal with the beef that doesn't really exist, but could, if we wanted to play it up.
For the three people on the internet, the like three 16-year-old girls who came to your defense when we started the podcast,
we'll settle. That's all I have is the rabid fan base of teens who care. And that's very important to me.
When we came up with the idea for this podcast, I was like, okay, I should cover my bases and make sure nobody else has done this. And I did a search in iTunes, which has a terrible like search algorithm.
Notoriously awful.
And like your podcast was popular. You know, I found later you guys had like 60 reviews, or it should have shown up when you search like Smash NBC. But I should have Googled. If I Googled, they're better with the SEO.
I don't think that we were the only one either when we started. I think that there were some like lesser.
Well, there were definitely ones. I found ones that happened like while the show was airing.
Right. But the idea of starting one way after the fact, as I'm sure you've realized, is just that it's clearly more fun that way.
Oh, yeah.
And having nostalgia for a show that was on the air relatively recently is always a joy.
If you have an idea for a podcast, you should say, are people going to ask, why are you doing that? And then do it.
That's the only reason to do it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's such a weird, people do podcasts now of shows that like are just starting. Like they just like jump on that bandwagon.
That's a commitment.
And it's a huge commitment. Also, like, what if it gets terrible? Like, what if you, I mean,
or worse, what if it's just boring and mediocre?
But yeah. You know, at least like when Smash took a turn, it took a turn in a really delightful way.
I can't wait.
So you really get to like be part of, I think it's good to know what you're getting yourself into like in advance. And also I think no podcast should be longer than two seasons, so
that's right. I mean, though, we've had our preliminary discussion of becoming Rise guys to discuss NBC's musical drama series Rise.
So of course I did, when Rise was airing, like do we continue with Rise, and decided that we do not.
I can't imagine that we're gonna really
I don't know
if I have it in me.
I don't think Rise ever captured the, like, Smash didn't exactly have like a huge fan base, but it had a very vocal fan base.
Rise never even got that.
No, it did not.
How many episodes did it have? Like 7?
I think like 10.
Felt like a lot more.
Wow.
But I think it was 10.
Yeah, every scene with Josh Radnor in it felt like it was 25 minutes long, I think. So
that was
That show was, that was difficult. I'm a big Jason Kadams fan. Friday Night Lights is like my favorite show of all time, and he created that show Rise, so it was a loss for me, because that was a show I really wanted to like it, because I did musicals in high school and it was all there. But so Lewis, tell us about 2012, Lewis. Here's Smash is coming on. I mean, you watched at the time, right?
I did watch at the time. Yeah. So Smash was like, I mean, I remember being, I was very excited because I really, like, I remember when Glee came on, I was, like, so into the idea of, like, a musical series on TV that was going to be very, like, musical theater nerd-centric.
Right, yeah.
And then Glee, like, kind of started that way and then, like, pivoted to Top 40 real quickly.
Right.
Like, they were instantly, were like, we're not going to do theater nerd stuff. We're going to be, like, for the people.
Yeah, I feel like that... That turn has been a lot of people's smash origin story. Like, a lot of people on this podcast have talked about being having this hope and glee and seeing it die.
And then, and Smash started, and I was like, okay, yes, it's weird that Karen auditions with Beautiful. Like, maybe this is not... We're trying to, like, straddle this, like, you know, pop music and Broadway world. But it's okay, because, like, this still seems, like, nerdy enough that I can get into it. And, you know, Rise, I think, also tried the same thing.
Yeah.
To sort of be like, can we have it both ways?
Can we be for the people and also for the Broadway people?
And turns out you can mostly be for no one when we try to do that. I mean, I think that, yeah, Smash is the closest we ever got to, like, something that was really, like, theater-centric in that way. And so I watched it all when it was on. And I really, like, I remember, like, going to parties with just the coolest people and talking about Smash the whole time, like, just finding the people there who wanted to stand in the corner
where,
and talk about.
Where were you at this time? Were you, like, living in New York?
No, I
were
was
you
in LA at the time. Yeah, so I had a lot, I don't know, I had a lot of, like, weird nerdy comedy friends who all really like theater and wanted to talk about Smash,
right?
And we would really just, like, spend an hour talking about every, like, inconsistency and every, like, plot hole and just, like, all the things that made no sense but that were really fun to, like, dissect, you know, down to, like, the basics of how is there any sort of competition between Karen and Ivy.
It's in this episode, I feel like it's worse than it, I mean, it gets worse basically every.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's a, there are reasons for that, but it would, they tried really hard to make this a rivalry that anyone was, like, on either side of, and it was pretty lopsided. Yeah, so we watched it and talked about it a lot, and then years later, I mean, I watched it till the end. Like, I was watching it when it was on Saturday nights, like, still still watching, still a loyal fan.
You didn't have any of those cool parties to go to?
No, not really. I want to stress the just that that was, they were not cool parties, just to, like, be really clear about it. But yeah, years later, I wanted to do a podcast about something TV related. We were definitely, like, I think Gilmore Guys had started, was, like, around the same time, and those were our friends, and we were like, we're gonna do something similar, with a show that people care about as much as Gilmore Girls, and so Smash was a logical choice, and yeah, I really liked that it was short, and that, like, it was the kind of show that I knew, as I'm sure you realize, is, like, very fun to talk about.
Yes.
The less sense it makes, the more fun it is to talk about. So yeah, that's my Smash story.
Well, and what was your experience like watching it again? Because I think a lot of us got caught up in the fever dream back then 5 years ago and went through this experience, and now it's just sort of a memory. But then to, like, come back to it and did you gain any new insights on it, or was it just as crazy as you remembered?
Just as crazy as I remembered. I don't know. Like, I think that it's, like, both better and worse than I remember it being whenever I watch it. Like, there's things that I didn't appreciate at the time that now I watched, I'm like, oh, that was actually, like, pretty good, or, like, innovative for what it was, or, like, this is, maybe I should have given this more credit. But, like, by and large, like, it drags a lot more than I remember trying, you know, especially when you watch it back to back, when you're, like, really watching it, you're, like, a little, it's very, like, samey.
Yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of, like, really bad choices that, like, I think at the time when I was watching it, I was like, this is going somewhere. And then when you realize it's not going anywhere, you're like, wait, this is just, like, there was no reason for this. Like, this whole, like, anything about, you know, adopting a child from another country, this is, like, not really...
Yeah.
There was no reason for this.
No. Except no reason Teresa for Rebeck, City Hall politics.
No. Teresa Rebeck had a vision, and we all suffered for it. And that's what it comes down to. But, yeah, I think that I definitely, like... Getting new people to watch it is always fun. Although, like, even now when people are like, I've never seen Smash, should I, like, give it a shot? I don't know how to answer that, because I truly, like, I feel like you had to be there in some way to understand why we still care. Or if you're watching it now as part of like a project and discussing it or whatever. But if it's like, I'm bored at home, like I need a show to binge, like I don't know if I would say Smash is the show for you.
Yeah, I mean, like I responded to Jimmy's tweet about this being like, I would anyone listen to this? And I was like, you know what? All my friends in high school watched Smash. I should. Or I know it was post high school, it was in college, I guess. But all my, oh no, it was post college too. Oh my God, I'm old. It was. Yeah, no, it was way post college.
I guess you were like really young.
No. I just turned 30, so it was. Yeah, it was post college, so it was. All my friends watched it though, and I was like, oh, okay, this is finally the opportunity to watch it. But like, I don't think. I mean, I had like, you know, a long time to watch it, and I never did until it was for this project specifically. So I think you're 100% right that it's like, unless you're really doing something that requires you to watch it, would I like choose to watch it?
No. You get enjoyment out of watching Smash, but it's not a easy enjoyment. It's not no. You know, it's not like it's work. Not like you're putting yourself in the hands of people who you know you can trust. Like I think that's like most like comfort TV or good TV. You feel like I can relax while I'm watching this.
Yeah.
You get tense watching Smash because it's exciting because you don't know what they're going to do.
Well, I think also, and then watching this episode that we're talking about today, I am, you know, it's one of those ones where it's like, there's really no song that stands out to me. There's yeah. like,
no,
really,
the one new song is not good.
Not this. Good.
Yeah.
And it's coming off the heels of arguably, I think, one of the best songs in the show in the last episode, which is Don't Say Yes Until I Finish Talking, which I love.
Interesting.
Loved.
Arguably.
One of the best at all. However, kudos to you for picking a, you know, something a little different.
I just love me a good Christian Borle Patter song.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I get that. Dig Deep is totally forgettable. And then also, you know, you have like anything involving like Cat McPhee's Marilyn voice is going to be
oh boy. It's going to be hard.
Yeah, why don't we get into episode talk?
All just grabbed our notes and we're like, all right.
Well, because the Marilyn thing, like pistols. What you said, so obviously like from episode one, we've been grappling with this thing that I think anyone who watches Smash does, which is that Megan Hilty is clearly so much better for the part. But they're able to sometimes sort of cheat that by not showing us too much of Catherine McPhee doing Marilyn.
Right.
But when they, in these last couple episodes, they've gone into this like hazy dream world where she's playing Marilyn. And in this episode, Derek even seems to be like consciously in the dream. Like after that dream, he's like, whoa, what just happened there?
Right.
And it is
Derek
so.
Derek has a brain tumor.
It is so.
I'd love to imagine that this whole That's show is.
I mean, I think like half the cast would have to have brain tumors for this show to make sense.
It's. I mean, I don't think it's any more complicated than the fact that like Derek wants to fuck Karen with a blonde, wearing a blonde wig.
Right.
It's not really like more. It's not deeper than that.
Yeah.
No.
And I think that like, the show has to act like she's a viable choice, but like it's very clear that it's just like Derek's boner that's guiding the way here.
Yes, I think that's right. But I think even Derek would halfway through coitus be like, I'm not buying this as Marilyn.
I will say that I did see Kat McPhee in Waitress recently, and thought she was charming and very talented and did a great job.
That's been kind of the consensus from.
And I think that like I don't think she was a good Marilyn, but I do think that like someone saw something in her that was like she would be a good leading lady on Broadway,
right?
And I don't know if it translated in this particular project, but someone was right.
Well,
and that was Steven Spielberg.
That was the one thing he came in.
Well, you know he was the, because that was his. I'm sure you guys have talked about this. He was very anti Megan Hilty, and that like. The big, he wanted to cut her entirely.
Yeah,
he was the big
we haven't.
Comic.
Is it a BuzzFeed article? The article that came out after between season one and season two.
Yeah, so
that's
Kate,
like
yeah. So my coworker Kate Arthur wrote a big expose. Did she mention that in the?
I believe that's in there. Marty hasn't read it yet because
It's spoiler.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid it.
No, I mean say whatever you want.
I'm here. Yeah. I don't worry.
But which is fascinating. That
yeah.
I mean, I guess he was trying to look out for middle America. We had a writer for Smash on, Jason Grote, and he said that like. You know, everyone who he knew in New York, like all the, you know,
like
theater people were all Team Ivy. But the word they got from the network was like, middle America loves Karen.
I can see that. And I also feel like, you know, American Idol had a big pull with a lot of people.
Sure.
I just feel like you cast someone who like has a total like Marilyn Monroe vibe and like already blonde,
right.
and then you just kind of try to make her compete with like just Iowa, and Iowa's not Marilyn Monroe.
I think also like a celebrated musical theater actor, and
right.
then like a versus pop singer who's never incredibly talented,
but doesn't have much acting experience. Right. I think the other problem besides her not being very Marilyn like is she's not very Karen Cartwright like she doesn't really play to me as the 24-year-old trying to make it in musical theater.
Right.
Like, I think if the show had been, you have Ivy, or Megan Hilty as Ivy, and then the competition is an American Idol pop star. Like, have Catherine McPhee play something closer to herself that's like, oh, you're great for this part. I mean, have it be more like the movie star thing. Be like, right. Well, but she
sold the tickets. Or
right.
That's a more realistic, you know, probably.
Yeah, that's what actually happened.
They definitely have that. They do that plot line on the show. But yeah, I mean, that someone plucked out of obscurity would suddenly be like the star of the show is very unlikely. And she doesn't have like the star quality necessary to make that seem plausible.
Right. She doesn't. They he's always saying that Cartwright girl has something special, but we never see. But I do agree. I mean,
maybe if they'd done the original pilot of Smash, in which, you know, they have sex, that might have been a...
Wait, was that in the original pilot?
Oh,
they
yeah.
did? Oh, God.
The Showtime pilot of Smash is, like, filthy.
Have that's you, like, amazing. Read the Showtime pilot?
I haven't, but I heard, know that it ends with Karen blowing Derek, and that's, like...
Wow.
That it's a very different story.
That's but fascinating. I, think that, like, I didn't know that.
I mean, that there's, like, this like weird thing of like Derek, like he's supposed to be a good director, but there's like no objective, like he just
evidence
wants that. It's all about Karen sexually, like I don't think there's anything beyond that. So it's weird that the show doesn't seem to realize that. The show kind of goes with this, like,
right,
maybe she is the right Marilyn,
right? And yeah, it would be a more interesting show. I mean, we've talked about that before, that the show does that, especially looking back just 5 years later, like there's a lot of unaddressed Me Too type elements with Derek where, like, if they're setting these things up and if they want to, like, actually deal with them in a fully fledged way, it would be an interesting show. But they sort of half... It's like, yeah, he sexually harassed me.
Right.
But
he's such a good director.
They do... I mean, not to give too much away.
Oh, please.
They do kind of try to, like, deal with that a little bit season two. And I know that was partly when Josh Safran came on trying to sort of reconcile with...
Right.
The mess of, like, this really inappropriate relationship.
Right.
And there's more of that in season two as well. But, there's a lot of weird stuff. I mean, I was just thinking about, like, watching this episode again, like, the stuff with Tom and Sam feels, weirdly, like, inappropriate. And, like...
It's hard to...
Not just because Julia, like... forces them to go on a date, like, which is
and has a restaurant on like speed dial. She's just immediately called.
Don't we all?
like a restaurant in the middle of Times Square. Like who was it? Like Bubba Gum Shrimp? Like where?
That was my favorite thing though. Was that when Tom went on a date with the lawyer? Has
yeah.
happened. That's happened, right?
Okay,
because they're Republican.
Right.
That they went to Pigalle, which is not there anymore, but it was a restaurant in a hotel on 8th and 40 something, and it's like this garbage tourist place that I liked going to because they had good French onion soup, but like no one ever goes there.
Right.
The nightlife of the world exists between 43rd and 49th and 8th Avenue, and that is
to be fair,
like when you're doing a show, like, you know, you might be in that area, you might like be in Hell's Kitchen because like you have to be, you know, between shows or between rehearsal or whatever, right. But no one is going to go on the first date to Pigalle.
Right.
Or wherever they go.
They're, like, walking past TKTS. Like, they're just
they're
hanging
like,
out.
No, they're, like, in Times Square. And it's weird. But that feels... I don't know. Is that, like, weird? That's a power dynamic thing. Like, I don't think that... Like, Tom's a composer, but it's still weird that, like...
Yes.
He would be dating someone on the show.
Yeah.
But we get a new trait from Sam, which is now that he doesn't just love sports, he also loves God.
That's true.
So we get a second checkbox to have as a character trait. So thank God, because I was really, you know, the New York Knicks stuff, I was like, oh, I got to have one more thing to hang his hat on.
I think that it was Rachel Schuchert in her recaps who called him sports gay.
I believe that.
That was
right.
like what
I
we, and, but right. it, he's also Jesus gay. So
yeah.
Yes, kudos to him and his many traits.
Right. They can't let characters on this show just be
well-rounded normal human being.
They have to be a full word or two before.
Yeah, the bartender has to be in the mafia, and
well, I mean
Liam Neeson from Taken.
That guy.
He's honestly becoming, I hate to say it, he's becoming a character that I kind of don't mind watching in the show.
I like him.
Okay. Nick?
Yeah, Nick.
Yeah.
Nick the bartender?
I don't really
like... has shady ties to something?
Yeah, I just feel like I like Angelica Houston so much, and I feel like she is consistently... I take the least notes when I'm watching her scenes, that I'm sort of like, oh, this show at least feels like the right amount of camp in Angelica Houston's scenes, and so I just sort of like their dynamic, even though it's like not particularly good television.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like, I'm sort of watching and just kind of being like, well, this is wild, instead of being like, well, let me break down about Derek and how stupid he is.
Yeah, I like Angelica Houston a lot, too. It's... I don't know. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. They're fine.
It's fine.
I don't know what to say. Like, it's
look,
it's just,
I don't, it's not good.
It's like she's kind of in a different... This show just has a lot of... Everybody's in different shows sometimes, and she always seems like she's slightly... think she's in a different show than everybody else. I don't know.
I guess, well, it's just kind of just all these like kind of forgettable side romances that I feel like we don't really need, because right. You know, we have like the her stuff with Nick, and then like there's also like this weird like Karen and Dev and RJ, is that
AJ who looks exactly
RJ,
like RJ, yeah. He looks exactly like Catherine McPhee, right?
She looks like Nassim Pedrad.
That's good. I like that.
There is literally a scene, I think, in the last episode where she turns to the camera and it is Catherine McPhee. And you're like,
whatever it is, it's like, does anyone care?
No.
Like, no.
No.
So I guess, like, I don't know. Like, show me more theater drama and less relationship drama, which is why I am not making TV, because they probably were told to make more
right.
relationship drama. Although I don't think that, like, Angelica Houston's romance is what people were really, like,
no.
tuning in for. I do understand the push to, like, create more, you know... will they or won't they, and like love triangle type drama.
Right.
I just feel like so much of this episode in particular is like interpersonal conflict and nothing else. And I feel like the show is at its best when it's the opposite of that, when it's just like, okay, here's a problem we all have to solve together. I don't know. I just watched The Martian for our other, me and Allie do a movie podcast, and we do like sequels to movies. And I just watched The Martian, which is literally a movie that is only problem solving and non-interpersonal conflict.
Oh yeah, that sort of thing's super satisfying, just to see people be good at doing
yeah.
their job.
And it would be so easy for this show to still be engaging and not have any bullshit about City Hall or Tom and Sam or anything, and instead it just leans so hard.
Well, okay, so let's get into the big show related drama of the episode, which is Uma Thurman coming in as Rebecca Duvall, the movie star who is taking over the role of Marilyn.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't get Gwyneth.
And do you think that's what it was?
I think this part is like 100% a Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, that was my biggest takeaway, is like, it's weird because Uma Thurman is a pretty big star, but she is in no way playing into the Uma Thurman star persona on the show. Like, it feels like she's playing some other movie star persona.
Yeah, she's not playing Uma. I mean, even like... as a type,
right?
Uma's not like a name like that.
No,
and it wouldn't. I mean, I don't know how Parisian Woman did. However, it did was better than it deserved to do. But like, it didn't like that show was like, I don't know. I don't think that she's the draw they would need.
No,
I think that like Gwyneth Paltrow is, and they name check Gwyneth,
right? Like, which is always times. Weird when they do that, if they're like trying to make her be the Gwyneth. Like, it hurts your case when you name check the person you're trying to.
And they do
be
it with Scarlett Johansson in the previous few episodes.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, so Rebecca comes in, and she has she's actually, I very much like the scene where she sings the song badly, because
yeah, I did too.
I've mentioned this before, that I think the show like is always really scared to show people fucking up.
Yeah.
Like, even when they want somebody to be like, oh, they did a really bad job right. of that, they also, it has to like sound good and be.
And then she just falls off a platform once right. and you're like, oh, she was a mess.
But I thought the way in which she played like
I
a
love
bad
it.
Singer was very well
yeah,
done,
because I really
it wasn't like
it.
So bad that, because sometimes you see actors play bad actors and you know they like want to prove so bad that they're a good actor that they're like, let me do my bad acting, come in here, you need to cut, like they just go so over the top with it. But she does like just good enough that you could believe somebody wouldn't quite know they're a terrible singer.
Sure.
And it like makes you cringe in a good way.
I still think it was a little bit too bad. I still have a hard time believing that she, like, would go in there and start singing like that without any sort of, like, sense of that this was not
Yeah.
Good. Because then later in the episode, she says that she does.
That is true.
She like says it like I can't do a ballad. Like you can't sing in this key. Like she knows. So it's weird to me that she would step in there and suddenly start singing and like be surprised people aren't like really into it.
That's kind of like my biggest problem with this episode is that the first half and the second half feel like it was written by two different people. That it's like that her character, in the end being like, I know I can't do this. You need to do this. I was like, oh, I love this. But the character in the beginning, there's no growth. Like, it feels like we missed three or four scenes that explain why she was the way she was originally.
By the end, they're like freaked out that she's like giving notes again, even though it's like, well, I thought we were all on the same page. Like, she's trying to make this better.
Right.
And, like, she's also like not wrong that the show, as we know it, is a collection of like, ballads with no development or no
they said
else.
In the
like,
last episode we finally found a song that Marilyn won't be
exactly
right, which aside from the fact that like this is too much work for any one actor, like every time they talk about bringing Smash to Broadway they're like, or sorry, Bombshell to Broadway, they're like, well, we don't have a book, and it's like, yeah, because you guys never bother even ever coming there, but like it's just all these songs that you can't even imagine all existing in the same show.
Oh, 100% no,
like the more songs they add, like they're like there are just so many songs with like character, like the fact that like Arthur Miller is a character at some point apparently, but we
never hear about any.
It's all like scenes. The only songs we see feel like they're songs that would like introduce characters, kind of like we have the Arthur Miller introduction number, the like Daryl Zanuck your favorite song.
We have a
Stanislavski,
right? A Stanislavski
like
song,
all, which I did not love. Like welcome to the world of the show, and then it's like welcome to the new world of the show.
Right. Yeah. So I don't really I have a hard time believing this show would ever really exist. But yeah, I think that like her note that like we're missing some of Marilyn's her interior life and like developing her as a character is like probably on point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably is.
So like kudos to Rebecca Duval for getting it.
That's right. That's right. What else do we have going on in this episode?
What else? So we
Leo's have... failing calculus. Sorry.
Oh my god, yeah.
Bring that up.
He's officially become one with the couch.
Can you imagine like Leo ever getting into calculus? Like that kid is like is clearly like very, very slow.
He wouldn't be able to find the classroom,
let
alone the school.
Know what's happening with that.
We were thinking like it's possible that he's some sort of monkey or something like that, because he's always eating bananas, but he was very banana focused in the early episodes.
Leo loves bananas.
He had a monkey brain transplant.
And also my theory early on was that like every scene he walks into he's not like he doesn't exist except when he's on screen, so he only is he's sort of like a baby with the you put a sheet in front of their face and they think the world disappears.
Oh my god, what is that called? It's gonna drive me crazy.
Yeah, there's a word for it.
I'll remember it,
think of it. But yeah, but he's just, he's failing calculus, but maybe he'll do better if either his parents get together or if he gets to meet Rebecca Duval. That scene where he asks if he can meet Rebecca Duval if he gets a B on his test is kind of disturbing to me. You could meet her until now. Now that you're asking like that, no, you cannot meet
her. It's very weird. They don't, I mean, the problem with him from the beginning is like that he was clearly written by someone who's never met like a child. Like he could be anywhere from 10 to 20. Yeah. And like, depending on the scene, he is any of those ages. Right. So like there are things where he seems way too old to be saying something like that.
Right. When's my baby sister coming from China?
You're like, are you like a teenager? And then he's like smoking pot.
Yeah.
And then he's like
eating grilled cheese sandwiches.
He's just, there's a lot of stuff that feels wrong age wise.
Yes.
And again, like, I think there's something like the way he wants to meet Rebecca Duval, like would be cute if he were like 12.
Right.
But he's a little too old for it, and you're like, it's weird.
And he's wearing a lot of blush. Like, I don't know.
To go back to Rachel Schuchert, you know, she called him Carpet, and that was always, which is like always what I think of when I think about Leo.
It's so funny.
There's a great thing in Kate's Smash story, which you should definitely read.
Yeah.
But I'll just bring up the Leo stuff, because they had tried to recast him after they'd filmed like several episodes, because they were like,
oh really,
this kid is like,
because I read that story a long time ago, so
yeah,
a lot of this
they were like, this kid is dreadful.
Yeah.
And the actor has gone on to like be a good actor,
right,
and is like in
Brooklyn.
He is a good actor. I think it was like, I don't know what happened there, but he's like just like abysmal, and they didn't want to recast him, but it was like gonna be too expensive basically.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's so bizarre. Like, every time he shows up, it's just, like, shocking that he was ever, like, on this show, and that, like, he, that they, like, wrote lines for this character. Like, it's just, it's so strange.
It's crazy because, like, and this, I feel like this is, like, a just slight difference between 2012 and 2018, but, like, TV has gotten to the point in quality where, like, you don't see something that bad on TV anymore. Like, they,
at least for very long. Like, you might see something that bad for like
one scene, yep, and they're like, okay, we just had this day player just like fucked up and we can't figure out a way to fix it, but like,
but you're not, you're not 11 episodes into a show and see
with just like a major recurring role who's,
yeah,
or maybe he's even a series regular. He's in basically,
he's not a regular, but
he's like 9 out of 13 or something like that.
Too much. Yeah. Are
there only 13 episodes?
No, there's 15, but
oh, God,
yeah, it's a strange performance.
It's not a strange performance. It's the worst performance on camera of all time, I think.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's up there.
Sometimes I regret saying things like that, but you know what? I'm going to say that it's probably the worst recorded performance.
He's good now. So
yeah,
like,
he's got on to a good career.
Yeah, if he was just bad all the time, I'd be like, yeah, give the guy a break. But he's obviously a celebrated actor now, and so the writing did not help, and the costume did not help. I thought he was wearing a wig. I don't think he is.
He's not wearing a wig. No, he really, I honestly,
piece of carpet.
He's mostly like a 12-year-old who occasionally has to be like, has to act 16, 17, which is the age he's supposed to be, I believe.
Yeah.
But like, it is very, very strange that he, like, they could not figure him out at all. And right, like, maybe the direction was also bad and the writing, but
they give him like Blue's Clues, like Steve from Blue's Clues shirts with like big white collars and stripes. And it's just, he's got everything working against him along with not being good.
I just imagine like smoking weed with that kid. Like, and
can you imagine?
It would just be so stressful. He's just like such a weird, like, oafish, like,
he would like bite the joint.
Yeah.
Like, he would just be talking about his mom and dad the whole time. He'd take one puff and just be like,
my mom writes a musical. dad and mom don't love each other anymore.
I just wanted a baby sister from China.
And she's still waiting. You know, my baby sister is still waiting for me. He's just chewing loose.
I did watch with someone, though, who was like, he's like, this is like, no, I'm not making fun of people who are special needs, but sure, someone did ask me watching it, is the character special needs? And I said, I don't actually think he was written that way, but I understand.
But it is close enough where
confusion.
It's like,
I asked that
real
two episodes ago. I was like, I feel really bad for railing on this guy because right now in this moment, season one, episode 9 or whatever, is he supposed to be special needs? And I don't think he is.
Developmentally disabled. Yes, I do not think that he is. And I think the show was confused about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this has been Leo. This has been Leo's Leo's well,
so
loser corner.
So Leo ties into this plot because Julia and Frank are still separated, and we get our buddy Brian Darcy James pops in,
still
for
not singing at an emotionally heightened moment, not singing, which is still the travesty of the universe.
Well, right, get ready for some great Brian Darcy James songs, right?
I mean, Worry, Be Happy so far on
Guitar
Hero.
That's pretty much it.
there's the one moment where he sits at the piano that we've also passed, where he sits and like sings two lines of her song about Michael at the Brooklyn Bridge. It's slightly better than Don't Worry, Be Happy,
okay,
but it's
the Guitar Hero.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
We end every episode because I didn't realize Brian Darcy James was in the show.
Right. Neither did the show.
So we end every episode by asking our guest if they have a performance by Brian Darcy James that they'd like us to listen to or watch. So
think about that.
Think about that if you have something. If you don't, we can pull up anything. But we always use our outro to us all hanging out and listening to a great BDJ performance because I'm a big fan.
He's great. And he does a little scenery chewing in this. Yep.
I've listened to Giant nonstop since we had it on a couple of
days.
Truly listened to it.
I've listened to a couple times.
Every day.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Just a shout out to our guests who brought that on.
Yeah. Yeah,
this scene doesn't do much for me. It's just sort of the
restaurant
same
scene it's guidance counselor scene.
The guidance counselor scene, I guess, is like, the restaurant scene did nothing for me, and the guidance counselor scene was like, okay, I get it, she's supposed to be emotionally upset and he's supposed to be this cold, you know, person, and that's it. But it's just anything revolving around Leo or their home life, I'm just like, I don't give a fuck, I don't want to watch, I don't care. But that's just me.
No, I think that's everyone. Yeah. I don't think anyone was dying for more of that. I did. I in terms of people's like relationship drama, though, I actually like the Tom Sam scene.
Yeah.
Even though I think that someone saying their favorite Sondheim is the frog is like unbearably pretentious. And like,
I like that they do that joke and don't explain it. And that's like a just for theater people
right.
thing. That you just have that, and it's just like,
and you're like, oh, Tom is annoying.
Right. That's like, so, and that's a Tom choice, though. I feel like that fits the character.
But I really like, I feel like the Julia husband cheating drama stuff we've like seen a million times, but like a gay guy in his late 30s who like has never been in a serious relationship and like is negotiating like, you know, how soon to have sex with the guy he's like interested in is like a way more interesting storyline to me,
right,
as a sad 30 something gay, but also just like something we don't see on TV as much. And I think that Smash, like, for all its faults, like had these like more well-developed gay characters
played by straight actors, but
sure. Christian Borle, yeah, I'm going to stop there. I have no excuse for him except that he does it a lot, so I guess that's fine.
you do it enough.
That's been the general consensus.
Like, that I'm like, eh. They had some actual... They had some gays on the show. They just didn't give them that much to do.
Right, that's true.
Yeah. Christian Borle almost counts. No, but I think that like it's an interesting conversation and like you know, that we don't see that played out very often on TV.
And I can't imagine at that time there was a particularly large amount of conversations like that happening, or at least scenes like that being written. I feel like now we'd kind of be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's sort of in the...
Well, now everything's it's a free-for-all.
Right.
I was watching a Freeform series recently.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about... Does anyone watch Freeform?
I don't think there's any Freeform on my TV rotation. Yeah, but
well, okay, what? So this is Show the Bold. So Freeform used to be ABC Family. Yeah. This is a really important tangent. Freeform, like, used to be ABC Family. They moved to Freeform for a variety of reasons, and it's like not as much like family oriented programming as it used to be.
Right.
It's still like geared toward teens, maybe, but like it's young adult. And I'm watching the show The Bold Type, and like one of the characters started dating a woman last season. That she's also a woman, so that's why it's relevant. And like they have this fight in the first episode of the new season where her girlfriend's like, you never go down on me, like you've never, and then they have this whole conversation about how she's like really worried about like what that's gonna be like,
right,
and like is she really like queer if she won't like go down on her girlfriend,
right.
And I was like, this is like wild, like,
yeah,
this is like a conversation that I never thought I would see on TV,
sure,
particularly on like, the on channel a, that used on, to be on ABC Freeform. Family, yeah,
and then she like, spoiler alert, like goes down on her, and I'm like, they show it not super graphically because it's still like not HBO, but I'm sure. Like, this is like crazy, like good for Freeform,
yeah.
Good for talking about, you know, lesbian sex in this kind of detail.
Yeah, and I think that Tom and Sam scene, I mean, it is true, like, again, 2012 is not that long ago, but it was, you know, gay characters were often sort of the like Modern Family, peck on the lips, you know, very desexualized, right.
Well, I think it's either desexualized or like hypersexual, so it's the right. idea that like either like of course they're going to go off and have sex, or like we're never going to see any sort of intimacy.
Right. So seeing sort of those two ideas butt up against each other a little bit is at least something to chew on.
And as much as like Sam annoys me as a character because he's like such a nothing character, they were clearly trying something by being like, he's into sports and he's Christian. Like, he is not your typical gay, which is really obnoxious.
Yeah, but they, I think they on some level
there was a good intention there of like showing like, you know, a character who does not fit into like a conventional TV idea of what a gay man looks like.
I did not think of it like that.
Already had smart. Like 11 episodes in, they've already had the gay Republican character. Like, they have had three major gay characters,
sure,
and two of them are like buttoned up, straight laced. I don't know. It's funny, like in this show about Broadway, where there's like so many people who get to be so fully themselves.
Right.
It's because Smash wants to be Angels in America and is bad. I have a really long-running theory that I want to talk with
that
you
about. Smash wants to be Angels in America.
Smash literally just has, like, a million scenes that are worse Angels in America. It's just all, like, all Joe Pitt scenes with, like, Dev outside of City Hall, but also Sam. It's all just bad echoes of Angels in America.
Didn't Deborah Messing play Harper at some point?
Did she?
She might have.
She had played Harper at some point.
Doing Broadway at that time.
Or else she wishes. But
interesting.
Or I wish. I feel like at some point that happened. I could be crazy.
I would
fact check that.
All right, listeners, fact check it.
tweet at us at hashtag Deborah Messing Harper Watch. I realize people are like, messing. Oh, I'm sad that that doesn't exist. Yeah. I've said a lot of fake hashtags on the show.
It's real now. Yeah. Once you say it, it's out there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, so then let's talk a little about Karen and Ivy and their sort of somewhat coming together with the enemy of my enemy is my friend, with Rebecca Duval.
The enemy of my enemy is my Marilyn.
That's right. I don't know. What do we think of this? Bringing them together a little bit.
I mean, the show has to, right? Otherwise, what are we doing here? But I just sort of... Uma Thurman's character is so bad. She's so bad at singing and she's so bad at acting, at least in the scenes that we see her do stuff. It's sort of like, yeah, okay, well, what else are we going to do? I don't know. I think if she were better, it would be more interesting to see Ivy trying to poison the well with Karen being like, well, this is what you have to be like when you're a star. And instead it's just sort of like, well, they're not going to change. Ivy's going to still be this sort of scheming person and Karen's still going to be the goody two shoes and we're not going to see any change. But I don't know. That's just,
I really like the scene at the bar though.
The scene that looks like a Budweiser commercial.
I just like, I really like them as frenemies.
Yeah.
I think that it's like real, it's fun. And I think that like, I don't think that they were acting. I don't think Karen's acting as goody two shoes as she was originally. Like, there's like a little tiny bit of edge to her, as much as she can muster. I don't know. I thought it was like,
yeah, they have their sort of weird ball busting back and forth.
Yeah, exactly. Like they know the situation and they know that they're both kind of screwed by this like,
yeah,
horrible addition to the show.
Yeah, I wrote Ivy and Karen are co-conspirators, which I like.
Yes,
but it's sort of like that's as far as I kind of got.
But you know, I also feel like, I don't know. I guess the idea is that like maybe like if Uma Thurman / Rebecca Duval like fails, that then Karen will become Marilyn. Or,
well, what
or,
I like is that they're setting up this sort of unclear situation of like if Rebecca Duval falls, who does get it? And Ivy says something about like when she falls, you know, it's a free for all, and I'm going to fight tooth and nail for it. And I do think that's an interesting, like, sure. An understudy in a Broadway show is not the natural successor to the part if somebody leaves. You know, when Jeremy Piven gets mercury poisoning from eating too much tuna fish, his understudy doesn't take over the role. They like fly in, you know.
It happened with straight white men, though.
Oh, right. Really? Yeah.
The understudy. Well, they recast, and then once the person they recast with left, then they gave it to the understudy.
Yeah, but that was just like, so it eventually enough people left the part that.
So eventually, perhaps Ivy will get to be Marilyn.
We'll see.
But until then, it's going to be Rebecca Duval's assistant. I would love to see him do it. I actually love that whole bit of like Ellis and the phone call
fucking up.
Yeah,
I just think it's like it's such a like horrible, like it was the only moment I've ever felt bad for Ellis, because it's just like everyone's biggest fear,
and everyone's done something like that, like whether it's a text message or
That bad, but like pretty bad.
It could be rough. Yeah, I actually
feel like
I
sent
that.
A text that was like close to that bad. I think I've done that mistake. Like, I can't remember. I think I've, like, washed it out of my brain because it was such a bad mistake.
You have to, like,
but, like,
really...
Yeah, if I, like, could remember it, it would torture me every day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's a fun story. And I like that actor playing her assistant. I think he's fun. Like, I think he's... I don't know.
I would love to see him as Marilyn, is all I'm saying.
he would be good.
He would be at least as good as Rebecca.
He probably would be. Ellis is... still trying to slither and slide. What are your feelings on Ellis? Because like that's a, you know, when the show was airing, he was one of the big like points of contention,
right?
And points of,
as he should be.
Yeah, I mean, is that
no? There's no. There's feelings about Ellis have not changed. Ellis is a horrible character. Ellis is like a classic example of a show thinking that like they can just easily write a character you love to hate.
Right.
And like not understanding the distinction between like a character you love to hate and a character you hate. And like Ellis is just like a miserable, like unlikable character from moment one and never gets any better.
It's hard. I feel bad for him. I mean, I feel bad for the actor.
I do feel bad for the actor. It's not really his fault, but also like, it's not like not his fault. I mean, it's bad all around.
Yeah. Wasn't it said in that Kate Arthur piece that Spielberg loved Ellis?
Was it?
I believe that was said.
I don't remember that, but I wouldn't be surprised. Spielberg has terrible taste. Spielberg made The Lost World. Like, you know, we can't really we can't really trust his judgment on things.
That's true. That's true.
No,
I'd like
I mean,
to get E.T. in here though.
Sure. No, Ellis is awful. I think that like I don't know. He's awful, and also like never really feels like it's the same problem you mentioned where the show often feels like we're like they're all in different shows, and like Ellis is like so heightened soap opera evil sometimes you're kind of like, why are we even like, what is he doing?
Yeah, he's
here?
Always
like,
leaning out from behind the door frame.
Raising an eyebrow. And,
it's just it's so like it's so campy and but like in a really just dumb way.
And in a not funny way. It's like a strange thing because like if you just made that character like gave that character five like hard jokes per episode, it would kind of work. Even though it would feel like a different show, it would be like, oh, this guy's like out of 30 Rock, but it's kind of hitting. Like he's just sneaking around doing his Commedia dell'arte thing. I would be kind of into it. But he's like he doesn't get given jokes. He he's just like heightened but not funny, which is a strange thing.
Oh man!
Like and nothing like dramatic to grapple. Like you don't have any. You don't care about him at all.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Speaking of things that we don't care about,
dig deep.
I was gonna say Casual Friday too.
I care about Casual Friday too because when I hosted Smash Trivia, at Club Coming, which is where I procured my shirt. I'm wearing
Now. Drama and so laughter much. And tears, just like pearls.
Pearls. Yeah.
Just like Pearl Studios.
When I hosted trivia at Club Coming, one of the answers was Casual Friday too.
What was the? Do you
was
remember
the question? The, what is a car commercial?
Yeah, or is a question? What looks like Threat Level Midnight by Michael Skarn from The Office?
It was no. I think the question was just kind of like name. Yeah. Like I think it might have been something like name one of two Rebecca Duvall vehicle like starring movies,
that's
and like,
good.
You could have either said Casual Friday or Casual Friday too. But
what I don't understand is they talk the whole time about how it's a comedy, and all we see of it is her like driving.
It's an action comedy,
kind of like The Heat.
Okay, The Heat, maybe The Spy Who Dumped Me.
It makes no sense, but also like it, and none of it makes any sense. But it's I think it plays into the fact that like the character makes no sense. Like as you said, like Rebecca Duvall is like not a real type of like an actor. Like her, she's very inconsistent as a character.
Right, there's
she's,
no analog in real life for her.
And like you know, without giving too much of away, like there's a sense like that there's a paparazzi presence, like that she's like news to people. That
right,
she's,
we
like,
see like her boyfriend comes
deal.
In.
Her
she's
boyfriend
in page
in
six.
That, that's
yeah, her leather
but, like,
jacket.
It just, we get more of that, like, she's, like, very famous.
Right.
And it's very confusing as to, like, what
who
kind
the
of...
Who the analog is.
Right.
Like...
I think that, like, I feel like it's someone... Yeah, I don't know why I think...
Sandra Bullock?
I think we've, like, I think on my podcast we had the same talk where we were trying to figure out, like, who it would be. Because it's hard to find someone who, like, is, like, a very well-known, like, actor who seems also respected, but, like, is also, like, tabloid fodder.
Right.
It's like Anne Hathaway...
Anne Hathaway, 2 years ago,
Anne Hathaway. Sort
maybe.
Of.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, when they hire her, like, it's not, when they talk about her before she starts singing, is, like, as if she's actually a good actor. It's not like they hired, like, you know, Paris Hilton, like, in a stunt casting way.
Right.
Which they could also do to sell tickets or whatever.
Right.
Which would be a hilarious storyline.
Sure. We're not, like, 15 years into Chicago here, like, hiring whoever the fuck. It's
whoever
like,
YouTube star
HGTV
it is today.
Host.
It's clearly, like, they're hiring a big name A-lister. The fact that, like, no one knows she can't sing, though, still is, like, boggles my mind. Like, that they would put all this money into her and publicity and not know that, like, she... And also, there are so many actors who are famous who can sing.
Right.
I did love that line that Tom says where he's like, hey, you told me she could sing and she can't. What gives? Like, there was, like, a really, like, tight, well-written line that I was like, oh, this is something that someone would say.
Right. But then, like, they're all like, well, I was told she could. Or then, and then someone said,
I saw her sing on SNL.
Oh, yeah. Oh boy, I wonder what she was. What do you think? What sketch was she doing on SNL?
I think it was probably the monologue.
Yeah, the monologue.
You know,
Jake Gyllenhaal sang on his monologue. And to be fair, like lots of actors who want to sing will like go on SNL and find a reason to, and then suddenly they're like, you'll be like, oh, they want to do theater, and they like end up in a show.
Right.
Interesting.
And Gyllenhaal. I'm thinking about Jake Gyllenhaal, but I can't think of anyone else. I know this is like half.
No, it's I know exactly
like
what you mean.
Like there are people who like you can tell that they like want to do this.
Right. Finally,
Anne Hathaway
out my
sang
end.
A lot on when she did SNL.
Anne Hathaway. Yes,
I assume it might have been after Les Mis, which is a moot point. But the thing is, like you know, theater kids love singing, and a lot of them end up as like
serious actors,
and they want
to
do
Aunt Kendrick's.
But I really would love to know like who they envisioned when they like
I would also love to know who besides Uma Thurman they reached out to for the part? Because I feel like Uma Thurman had to be like 10th on the list. Yeah,
Gwyneth, although Gwyneth has a Glee connection, she did, that probably was too much. Was, but like,
do you think they? I'm sorry. Do you think they asked Scarlett Johansson also? They're just so obsessed with saying her name.
I don't know if you remember this, but she gets name dropped a ton in the early episodes,
like the first five episodes.
I don't remember that, but they could have. Yeah, I mean. I think it's also interesting, though, that, like, the actor is too old for the part.
Right.
Which, incidentally, like, she is too old for the part, and, like, you can kind of do that in theater. You can, like, flub a little bit, but I think that, like, what's interesting now is we're seeing all these shows, like, the Donna Summer musical, Summer, and the Cher show. I'm trying to think of, there's another example that I'm blanking
Beautiful,
on.
Beautiful, the Carole King. Well, or, no, that, I don't know what you're going
where
for.
Where I'm going with this is that they have different actors playing different
ages. Oh, sure.
The mirror versions.
They're doing that now. Like,
right.
They have, like, the Cher show and Donna Summer, and I think there's a third one that I, like, can't remember, but there's, I can't remember.
Okay.
There's definitely another musical like that.
I'm trying to think, too.
Where you have the actors playing different ages, and I think that's,
Fun Home.
Yes. The Fun Home.
Once on this island has young T-Moon for the first 5 minutes, and then she runs into the water.
The young goat.
And the older goat. No, I think that's, like, it's like, there's a, like, yes, you should have, actors can play different ages on Broadway, obviously, but also, like, if you wanted to do, like, a Maryland musical with, like, you know, young ingenue, like, or, like, Norma Jean.
Right.
It would have been weird to have Rebecca Duval playing, like, Norma Jean at the beginning.
Right. Well, and it's also just, like, it's a sort of strange, like, idea that they would get into this bind where the only actor, given what we know about, like, how the entertainment industry treats women as they age,
right,
that the only act, like, normally the problem is, like, you can find plenty of, like, young stars to cast in it who will be a big enough name, but the idea that the only person they can find is, like, a woman too old for the part just doesn't really ring true to real life.
Sure.
It's more like they would have, like, Emma Stone for that part or something like that.
Absolutely. I think that Michelle Williams would have been good too.
Well, she played the part in My Week with Marilyn.
Right. I was just thinking about people who've done cabaret.
sure.
But I think that if they actually did Bombshell on Broadway now, they would probably do that casting of multiple people because, first of all, too many songs for one person to sing.
Right.
And it's, like, an easy way to, like, get, you know, you could definitely have, like, a main Marilyn who could get, like, the leading.
Right.
Tony nomination, and then have, like, younger Marilyn and, like, I don't know.
Yeah, Chloe Grace Moretz or whatever.
Some
young Marilyn.
No stunt casting. We're only casting, like...
Yeah.
No, I just feel like you'd have to, though.
I think if it ever gets to Broadway, I think it's with Megan Hilty attached. That's my...
I think she would only do it if
for
it happened. Like, yeah. I think it would have to happen, like, within the next few years. I just don't think that she's gonna,
aging,
like,
out of the part. And she's getting...
Not even just that. I just think that I don't think she would want to, like, hold on to it for that long.
Right.
Like, it's just been so
long. I don't think it'll ever actually happen. And B, think... Do you think it will?
No, I don't. I just want
but you
it
want
to
it
happen.
To. I think if it does happen, it's closer to, like, a concert version of it, like they did.
Which they've done, yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think... I don't think you can string it together. I don't think you can string a book together.
Talking about it, I think if you're willing to, like... Write a fully new, like, write a brand new book, like, cut some of the songs, write some new songs, and make it an actual, like make it good and not just, like, I don't know. I think people will go see it. I think it would be a huge, like, event.
I mean, there's at least three people right now who would definitely
I would see it over
I would see it in a second. I want to see, like, the 50th anniversary version.
I have that. Can you imagine, like, sitting in a theater and, like, hearing, like, Let Me Be Your Star?
I would lose my goddamn mind.
Like, it would be so exciting.
It would be great. I think I just wonder if the show would have any actual appeal past Smash fans, because it would have to, like, to be an actual,
I think
recoup
it
its money.
Though. I think it could, and not to talk about Hit List at this point, but, like, I don't think that's a show that would work for people who don't care about Smash.
No.
I think it's just too all over the place and too...
And too much, like, a parody of a kind of show.
Right.
Like, Hit List is
like a show that you can just see. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah, you can see 20 versions of Hit List downtown
right.
and, like, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the music is great. I mean, like, the Shaman and Whitman stuff
is good.
I
think. Yeah.
I agree.
Mostly.
Mostly, yeah.
I think it's a consistently good part of the show.
Like, Dig Deep, for example, you could probably cut.
Is that the one that's lit like a basement production of Reefer Madness in the end of this episode? Yeah. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dig Deep.
Did not love that one.
It's weird. It's just like that. Oh, would that song exist in a story about Marilyn Monroe? I don't know. like with a song like we were talking about the other week with like the baseball number with Joe DiMaggio that they were like so excited to write.
Right.
I'm just like, who would we ever in a Maryland musical actually see a like?
No, they that's their whole thing, right? We could have a baseball song. It's like their whole like right. selling point yeah. for the musical. Well, no, but I mean they ended up doing Let's Be Bad, which is like a. Which is a Some Like It Hot song that, right. like, I mean, it's Some Like It Hot slash, like, Heard having problems slash, like,
but that would be a scene theme. In a Maryland.
Right,
musical.
But there is, like, they end up getting a baseball song in there.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not really about baseball.
Right.
But it's, like, baseball themed.
Right, right.
I want season two to have everyone be reading Joe DiMaggio biographies and being like, no, don't you understand? It's Joe.
We have
and
to just pivot. Have this. We have to yeah, pivot the whole show.
Just have too. This be baseball instead of Bombshell.
Yeah, Sam's like, I love it. Let's do it.
Or it's called The Diamond or something.
I mean, I'd see it.
I at this point, I'm watching Smash. I'll watch anything.
It's a good bar to set.
What else have we not covered plot wise in the episode? We're
I wrote one line that I want to bring up.
Okay,
which is that I wrote. Under it, this is only something here, let me find it. It's Karen to Dev. Yeah,
well, okay. So go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mean, let's just set the table on Karen and Dev a little bit. So Dev's been keeping from her that he did not get the press secretary job, that the douchebag from DC got the job. Yeah. And then he's also been getting closer and closer with RJ, the reporter. Who I guess last week offered, like said she could maybe help him get a job in DC.
Yeah.
And he's been keeping all of this from Karen.
Yeah. Just like Joe Pitt tries to get Karen to go to Washington.
You're just pushing this theory so hard.
I don't hate it. I mean, I actually kind of like this, this take
it's,
on it.
It's all there. It's all there. It's just, I Mr. Policeman, I gave you all the clues. But there's a line that Karen says where she's trying to get Dev to go to the God, I almost said the Three on a Match debut. The wow. Casual Friday 2 debut.
That was another trivia question.
Three on a Match.
I had to ask people to name, like, I think I said name two
Levitt and Houston.
Levitt and Houston musicals that are not Bombshell.
Heaven on Earth, Three on a Match. And End of Days was a different one that was on. It was like a fake. It was the one that Tom and Sam are walking past.
The other one that I can never remember are Three in a Match and Heaven on Earth. There definitely are more.
Yeah. But she's trying to get him to go see Casual Friday too. And she says the line,
we
haven't laughed together in a long time. And I wrote, is something a person who died in a roller coaster accident has tattooed on their neck? It's gotta be one of the best lines I've ever heard in dialogue ever written, maybe. And by best, I mean.
Yeah, I don't even. I feel the way that you were saying about the Leo and Frank stuff. I feel that way, but I feel more like if Dev just never existed in the show again,
it would be so.
I would
nice.
Be. I
it would be enough.
Yes,
I feel bad. I don't know why I feel bad for him.
Like the actor or the character?
The actor.
Oh, I feel terrible for the actor. He has the worst job in the show.
He also like was on that show, Code Black, the hospital show.
Ooh.
And they wrote him off after the first season for like no reason, just because they were done with him.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy,
he's
does
a perfectly
not have
fine.
He's a good actor. I don't think he's like. There's a lot of times where there's like actors give false notes on this show, like sometimes more false notes than true notes. I don't think with him, I'm not. I rarely am like, oh, that was a terrible line delivery or anything like
but
that.
But it doesn't. I mean,
just the character is nothing. He's a vacuum.
Yeah.
The only other
he thing, looks he makes Karen look interesting, which is
maybe that's the point.
Yeah. That, maybe yeah. so.
The only other thing that I had to add was one more moment of, I call, which I'm sure you have brought up or understand, like inappropriate intimacy, which is it's Nick and Angelica when he just basically grabs her. Is this in this episode or is this in episode 10 when he grabs her cheeks and just pulls her in for like the hardest kiss in the world? And every moment of intimacy on this show feels like
is,
I'm not
yeah,
supposed
I mean,
to be watching
have
it.
Have you noticed this? That just like the way they do like, sex scenes and romantic scenes on the show always has a strange like PDA vibe to it. Is that something that
I don't,
like, well,
I don't
like
think
the,
that,
the classic example of this is the scene with Will Chase and Deborah Messing in the rehearsal studio when
they're both wearing Levi's and
yeah
no
they're
shirts.
Both just wearing jeans and no shirts. It's just a strange like
It's like a high schooler's
sexuality.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, a, it's high, like schooler's, a high schooler's doctor sexuality. Office version.
Okay, I could see that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it's weird. That's weird. Okay. I just think of, like, yeah, I think this show's never really been very good at, it was never very sexy.
No.
And, like, moments that were supposed to be sexy often weren't, like Karen singing Our Day Will Come as Marilyn.
Yeah.
Was, like, for example, not a sexy moment, but Derek seemed to be really into it.
Yeah, he definitely...
He's into basically
Karen Boner then.
Yeah, he's KB.
all right. Well, we need to wrap up. But yeah. Lewis, thoughts going forward, advice giving us on this journey into Bombshell Land. Yeah, advice for Marty. You know, roadblocks to watch out for.
I think I would say, you know, keep an open mind and an open heart.
Sure.
You know, prepare yourself for season two, which is a bit of a journey.
I turned to Allie yesterday and I was like, is season two better than season one? And she wouldn't answer me. And so I'm nervous. I've tried to read truly nothing. I've tried to know,
you know,
nothing.
It's more just like there's a lot of like course correction, I would say, that happens. Okay. Some of it better than others. Most of it, it's, you know, you need to have its own correction.
There's that silence again.
I think it's hard because my co-host Matt had never watched Smash. Like, he was new to it, and so he had like a really hard time with season two when it started, because he was like, "What is this? Like, this is not what I signed up for."
I think like, if you were to just be like a viewer who did not keep up with entertainment news and were to be a Smash fan in season one and just watch season two, it would be like shell shock. You would just be like, God, what is happening here?
Bombshell shock.
Bombshell shock. Thank you.
No, thank you.
It's just a lot. You know, it ends up being very Leo-centric. The show really pans.
Oh, my God. Time, so I just shit my pants.
I mean, yeah, you got to have somebody playing Marilyn, and Leo fits the costume. And
well, all they have to do is take off his one weird blonde wig and give him another one, so it's fine.
That's his real hair.
I don't buy it.
He was born that way.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Do you have anything you would like to plug? You're on Twitter. You are at Lewis Peitzman on Twitter.
That's me. Yeah, follow me on Twitter. Read my tweets. I link to my articles that you could also read. Read my coworker Kate Arthur's piece on Smash.
Yes.
Written many years ago, but you know, it holds up as one of the great. I think
it's a wild ride.
Yeah, it's a journey. Yeah, I'm around. Always down to talk about Smash.
Amazing.
All right. Well, and guys, rate and review and subscribe. We haven't been saying that enough, but if you're enjoying the podcast, you know, do that. Help out on iTunes.
Where can they find you on Twitter, Jimmy?
Oh, I'm at Jimmy Blackman.
And I'm at MC Scan.
And until next week,
smash you later. To find more Smash Bros, go to smashbros.fun. That's SMASHBROS.FUN.
Or find us on iTunes, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
Smash Bros. Is produced in New York City by me, Marty Scanlon, and hosted by me and Jimmy Blackman.
I'm on Twitter at Jimmy Blackman, and Marty is at MC Scan.
If you know Brian Darcy James and think he would be down to do this podcast and maybe sing on it for us,
what the hell are you doing? Tell him to email us at podcastsmashbros@gmail.com. We'll see you next week on The Great White Way.
And now, Brian Darcy James.
All right, my husband's out there, so I can confess this. I have a massive, massive talent crush on this person. He's on stage with me now. I know him and his wife. We've gotten to share the stage together.
Uh-huh.
And now, as creepy as it sounds, I get to be him. I love you, Brian Darcy James.
Me too. This is Stephanie J. Block.
This is from Andrew Lippa's Wild Party, and his voice. I know, you better Google that, because the way this man sings this song is divine. I'm going to do it a little differently, but I love you, Brian Darcy James.
I want that on a t-shirt.
I love you, Brian Darcy James. Yeah.
That should be like the official Smash Bros. T-shirt.
What is it about her? Makes me want her. What is it about her that turns me pale? Something in her smile, something that I
Yeah. It's just taking on Shrek.
Yeah, this is from Shrek, right?
Yeah.
I was there for, I got a miscast every year. It's like my favorite thing that happens every year, except for the Jimmy Awards, which are the greatest.
We just had Natalie on and talked all about the Jimmy Awards.
The best. Natalie and I go together every year, except this year, because she was busy reporting or whatever. This was like the performance that made me, like, I don't know, lose my mind. I just love SJB.
Yeah, she's amazing. I just love watching actors who know how to act.
Yeah.
It's such a refreshing thing.
This has more drama in it
than nine seasons. Yeah, than nine episodes. Come on.
Like Trojan horse this in by like this like jokey intro where right. She's just like light and bantery and this is like I am here motherfucker
burning down the house.
Feelings inside. What is it about her that mixes passion with pride? Should I live without her and let her go? How loud must I scream?
Yeah. That was amazing.
I mean, everything.
And it's crazy that that's Brian D'Arcy James that's in the Shrek makeup, yeah, in the Stephanie J. Block makeup.
Wow.
I can't believe I cheated and gave you a Stephanie J. Block performance.
No, that's
but it was in his honor.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a song that he sings amazingly.
Yeah, he sings it unbelievably, but I love that so much. I think that was a great way to change things up.
Yeah.
Good, I'm glad to shake things up a little bit.